Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated, visit myspecialmortgage.com. That's myspecialmortgage.com.
It's Football at Four with Big Al and D-Mac on Sports Radio 104.3 The Band.
Barkevious Mingo. Isn't he related to Gene somewhere down the line?
Yes, I think he's a cousin or a relative of the great Gene Mingo from the Denver Broncos.
Okay. Yeah, you didn't bring... I know you didn't like him in the draft years ago.
I didn't.
Have things changed for him?
Well, he's a starter.
Yeah, he sure
is. So, you know, the one thing about the... one thing about the Seahawks is that they like the outside linebackers on their team. They like for those guys to... be very fast. Like, they're, you know, I talked to, you know, my teammate is their defensive coordinator. And so when you start talking to Ken Norton Jr. about the Seahawks philosophy when he was there before he went to the Raiders, he said to me that what they look for is the biggest, fastest guys in college football. And they'll teach them how to play. He said, but you can't teach big and you can't teach fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it makes sense that they drafted a guy who runs a 4.38.
Okay.
You know, so you know,
I'm looking at the names and it's
but
just
Barkevious Mingo's greatest strength is that he's fast.
Okay. What else about the defense do you want to, you know, now that we've watched a lot more? Hey, it's so hard to judge things in preseason. But
you can tell. You can tell a style. Like this Chris Carson, the running back.
Yeah.
His style is recognizable.
It looks cool.
Yeah. And
he's playing because Penny's been hurt and
right.
heavy.
But he looks great. And
nobody's ever heard of him.
No. No. I mean, I was trying to figure out who he was. And
who is he? Where'd he come from?
Man, I'm telling you, man.
Why am I here?
He is a treat to watch, man. He is a treat to watch. He played at Oklahoma State.
Oh, so okay.
He went to Parkview Community College.
Oh, so he's a transfer guy.
Yeah, excuse me, Butler. He went to Butler Community College, mm-hmm. Parkview High School.
He's a little last chance you guy.
Yeah, is that right?
Well, I mean, just that path, you know, doing the junior college thing before going D1.
But this guy from Oklahoma, and it says Oklahoma State University, Oklahoma City.
Oh, so... Wait, it's not Oklahoma State.
No.
Oh.
It's not Oklahoma State University. It's Oklahoma State University, Oklahoma at Oklahoma City.
So that's like some sort of D2 or...
It's the NAIA, I think, or something like that.
So you went from a junior college to an NAIA school? No wonder we've never heard of them, by the way.
Yeah.
Isn't that great about the NFL? Just get out there and play.
I mean, when you watch him play, though, man, oh my goodness. When you watch him play, he's wearing number 32.
It's not like he's some sort of well-known guy, though. I think we're just proving that right now.
Yeah, but, you know, when we played against the Vikings, there was another running back that was outstanding. What was the kid name from the Vikings that just he had 100 yards receiving on?
Well, remember when we had the listener on, he was talking about D'Angelo Henderson. I was like, yeah, it's a bummer, but look outside. Look at a tree. See all those leaves? Those are running backs.
But every now and then, D-Mac, you find these guys – not Latavius Murray. Who was the backup running back to Latavius Murray that day? I mean, ate us up. Yeah, Rock Thomas. Rock Thomas. Who heard of Rock Thomas before?
Isn't he from Miami?
Rock Thomas?
Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know where he's from, but let me say something. Rock Thomas, I'd like to have him in the Bronco uniform.
I like his name, though. Could be in Miami Vice.
So Chris Carson and Rock Thomas, Jacksonville State.
See, I knew it was Florida.
So Rock Thomas, man,
17 games over 500.
So I went in,
not playing Pittsburgh.
I went and looked back at Rock Thomas. Okay, and Rock Thomas and Chris Carson are the same running back. They're same kind of style, you know, slippery, fast, you know, bigger. You know, they're not small guys, but they run so well. They run like small running backs, but they have such tremendous speed. It's impressive. You know, of all the guys that I saw this past preseason that the Broncos played, I thought Rock Thomas was the best running back that we saw.
Okay.
You know, so I'm looking at Chris Carson saying that's the that he runs exactly the same way. So Oklahoma State University at Oklahoma City. Nobody, you know, was it Oklahoma State? Okay, because I'm like, I'm looking at something that says Oklahoma City, Oklahoma State at Oklahoma. Is he from Oklahoma City?
You know, it's okay. Don't worry about it.
I don't know.
It was a more fun story when we were just, you know, riffing about it.
He was born in Biloxi, Mississippi. Grew up in Georgia.
Okay, well, whatever. So Wikipedia was wrong. When is Wikipedia ever wrong?
The offensive line for Seattle is kind of interesting. DJ Fluker's on that line.
Well-traveled DJ Fluker.
So is Dwayne Brown.
Dwayne Brown's a hell of a left tackle. Don't look for any success. I'm telling you right now. Don't look for any success this weekend out of Bradley Chubb.
And Jermaine Idafidi. Javala. Ifeati.
Man, the language of coaches.
No, I'm sorry.
The former first-round draft pick, right? Was he a first-round draft pick? I'm not. You know, maybe I'm not on him right now. But I mean, the offensive line for the Seattle Seahawks look way better than they ever had. Way better. They look like they can run the ball on anybody.
Okay.
I'm just telling you what they look like. Now they put a fullback in the game and they got a blocking tight end.
I mean, they've lost a lot of players. KJ Wright's not available.
But remember how they
Earl
had
Thomas
this.
May not even play. He's just coming back. Brandon Marshall. Remember when Jamie Moyer made the Rockies? I mean,
50-year-old.
And we said,
pitcher.
Isn't this a great story? And then we really thought about it and we go,
no.
Hold on a second. This is horrible. This means that he was actually good enough to make the team. Brandon Marshall made this team as a receiver. I mean, love
Brandon. Was he in a battle?
Well, I guess so, according to the scouting reports out of Seattle, yeah. So he earned the fourth spot as their receiver. He's hanging on for another year. I mean, how long has Brandon Marshall been in the league?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, Brandon Marshall has never been in a playoff game.
For example, our fourth receiver is Deshaun Hamilton.
Right.
Our fifth receiver is Tim Patrick. I mean, we've got young, athletic, amazing guys. Like, no offense to Brandon Marshall. But there's no way he would have made the Denver Broncos as a receiver, right?
No.
But he did make it in
Seattle.
Very few
could make it as a wide receiver here. Because our two drafted guys and our two starters are legit.
All right. I watched him on tape a bit. There's a bunch of guys I know. I was looking things
up
left and right.
Don't look at the Seattle Seahawks like
it
you.
It wasn't that impressive, though.
No, that's what I'm saying. Don't look at them like they are going to put up 30 points on you.
No, somebody
that's
asked
not,
me.
That's not what they do. They're going to be in the 20, you know, the 20 point range
all year. Oh, all year. Okay.
All year.
Because my man Kevin Draco and I recorded something for one of these weekends, such a good dude, and he asked me for a score. Nobody has asked me for a score yet, so I just kind of thought about it and I came up with like 27-17 Broncos.
Right.
Because that's what Seattle looks like to me. And I just think that, you know, the Broncos are going to light it up a tad.
I think that they're going to run a lot of boot action. They're going to run, they're going to try to take advantage of the rookie. And because of that, you know, we're going to have to get ready, and maybe we may see more Shane Ray halfway through the game. The boot action is going to be big this week for the Seattle Seahawks.
Cecil was out there in practice in the locker room talking with Case Keenum and Vance Joseph. We'll hear from the horse's mouth, and Cecil Lammy has fantasy football going on tonight at Famous Dave's. We'll get to Cecil next.
Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage Special Circumstance Lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web, 303-790-2222, the phone number. SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716.
You're listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
You know, there's some experience, that helps. They're a similar defense, but they're a lot different, too. You know, like I said, a lot of different guys out there. They have, different coaches, different coordinator, different pieces of the puzzle. So it's a new challenge. We have, it's a different offense that I'm in. So
You know, it's a different, different mindset going in, but you know, it's still, you know, it's the Seahawks, and it's a big challenge.
That's Case Keenum. We're joined by Cecil Lammy, our Fan Broncos fantasy football insider, as he'll be at my favorite place for barbecue. That's Famous Dave's in the Corner Star Shopping Center at Parker and Arapahoe, and he was out at Dove Valley all day today, UC Health Training Center. Cecil, what is the Seattle defense when you've been looking at them?
Yeah, the Seattle defense doesn't take a lot of chances. They're not really one that is going to blitz a lot. They're going to play single high. It's going to be cover three for the most part, and they're going to rely on their coverage. They're going to try to bring some pressure once in a while, but this isn't a blitz-happy defense whatsoever. So Case Keenum, as he usually is going to have to be very careful with the football, and they're also going to have to try to account for that defender that's going to be unaccounted for. And you do that either by scheme or by just telling your running back, hey, you're going to have one guy to beat, because eight men in the box is going to be something they do to shut down Royce Freeman. We'll have to see if Freeman can find some wiggle room on Sunday against the Seahawks.
You know, the guy that I've been paying attention to is wearing number 26, has long dreads, and looks just like Richard Sherman, and that's Shaquille Griffin.
Right.
He's their starting star cornerback at left corner, and he's their new lockup guy. Is he the guy that, in your opinion, that would be matched up with Demaryius Thomas or Emmanuel Sanders?
He should be with Demaryius Thomas because of that length. And as you know, Big Al, Shaquille Griffin has good length, in a way almost like Aqib Talib, not the same level, and he's certainly not him or Richard Sherman, but he's a longer corner, a more physical corner, and one that's not afraid to mix it up or to get physical. So you take your largest receiver, that's Demaryius Thomas, you're going to put Griffin on that guy, because I think early in the season, we are going to see teams treat Demaryius Thomas like the number one. It may actually be where Emmanuel Sanders is the number one, or maybe even later in the year, Cortland Sutton is the number one. The Broncos have a nice problem with this trio of wide receivers, but especially early on, I think number one corners, no matter who the Broncos are facing, are going to go forward and treat Demaryius like he's the number one. That means Griffin is on Demaryius.
What'd you learn out there in Bronco land today?
You know, a lot of respect for this opponent, a lot of respect for those guys in the secondary. Also, picking the brain of Will Parks in the locker room today about the tight end position, because we'll think of Doug Baldwin or we'll think of Tyler Lockett. You don't really think of Nick Vannett, but this guy was a weapon at Ohio State, 6'6", about 265, a big physical target who can fly down the field. And we know this Broncos defense historically has had trouble covering tight ends. Maybe Nick Vannett is the secret weapon for Seattle, but Parks like did an expose on him when I talked to him. He knew all about him.
What's the health status of the Broncos right now? Where are we at? Is there anything going on with Derek? Here's VJ about Derek Wolfe.
Derek's had a great camp, you know, and he's had three really good games in preseason. So I've been impressed with where he's at. He's back to being a dominant player for us.
That's awesome. Sounds like Derek's healthy. How's everybody else doing?
Yeah, everybody else. When I talked to Will, I was like, hey, how are you feeling? He's feeling great. Talked to Shane Ray today, said he's feeling great. And Vance Joseph held up a blank sheet of paper when he first gets up to the podium. You know, as you know, D-Mac, he talks about injuries first. He just held up the blank sheet, said, here's our injuries.
That's awesome.
Any questions? And that's when I had to ask him about Earl Thomas. And nobody thinks it's that big of a deal because of the way other players have been playing and the way that they've got Kedrick Thompson, the kid from CU, who has been filling in admirably for Earl Thomas. So, you know, it's a short week. It's going to be a short week for Earl Thomas. In fact, if he does even play, and it didn't seem like any of the Broncos were that concerned. Obviously respectful of him, as you should be. He's going to be a Hall of Famer, but, you know, not like it's going to, drastically change what they do on offense.
You know, I was just thinking about this tight end, Nick Vannett. I mean, when you start talking about big, Cecil,
big.
He is, 6'6", 260-pound tight end. They mean business. Everything about Seattle says that they're going to run the football every opportunity they get.
Right, and they got the power back Chris Carson to do that. Rashad Penny, we know, about 16 pounds overweight. At last check, it's not like I've checked the scale on Rashad Penny, but he got a little tubby during the summer. So, you know, he's the number two back. It's actually their seventh rounder from Oklahoma State, and Carson's purely a power back. So you better be ready for a physical matchup. And if you're Bradley Chubb, and I talked to Chubb today as well, he talked about his mistakes in the first preseason game. You know, you got to clean those up. because against the power game, there might be a little bit of misdirection there as well. Chubb got out of position at times as a run defender, probably about three or four times during the course of the preseason. Got to clean those up so you don't get gashed by the big runs. Even though Carson is strictly a power back, this team's going to scheme to try to get you out of position.
Yeah, and then don't forget now, Rashad Penny, 5'11", 235, and Chris Carson goes, you know, 230. I mean, our linebackers are...
Uh-oh, that's a fantasy alert right there. You're doing a fantasy alert right now, Alfred. You're bringing up, you know, dark horse running backs, you know, that everybody always looks for in fantasy football.
No. I'm not talking about that. It's just that
we
have to be cognizant about that when we're looking at our linebackers. Our linebackers aren't big guys.
But it's a 1-2 punch, that's for sure. And I think Penny needs to get down to 220 like he was at San Diego State and like he was at the Combine. So, you know, altitude, getting a little out of shape, did Rashad Penny. Carson is the guy that will lead the way. Penny certainly, he's a first-round pick. So he's going to try to get some work in there as well. And yes, D-Mac, from a fantasy angle, anytime anybody says anything, you're thinking about that. I see Penny as more of like a desperation flex. And Chris Carson is a running back, too, a low-end running back, too, or flex play based on this matchup with the Broncos.
And in Pittsburgh, we're playing who?
Yeah, you're going to play Connor. You're going to play James Connor.
How many fantasy drafts, percentage-wise, do you think had Le'Veon Bell as the number one overall pick in the draft?
Maybe not number one, but in top three, I'd say 100%.
100%.
And here's the thing. Don't worry about it. It's just like when Tom Brady was suspended at the beginning of the year. Like, once he comes back, he's going to be Le'Veon Bell. And guess what? He's going to be back basically in week two.
Mm-hmm.
So don't worry about it. If you're drafting tonight, still pick Le'Veon Bell in the first round. It's crazy to pass on him because he's going to miss a game.
Okay, and you can get great fantasy advice from our guy Cecil tonight live at Famous Dave's Corner Star. Right there at Parker and Arapahoe. That's my favorite joint. Cecil, we'll see you there tonight.
Be good, fellas.
All right, Cecil Lammy. Robert Klemko, who's one of our favorite guys, a writer for Sports Illustrated, lives here in Denver, did an amazing piece on John Elway to kind of psychologically analyze what is going on with John Elway and quarterbacks. Details about that next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac.
Why am I here? I love the Broncos. I think that Mr. Bolin understands who I am. He understands, and I think where I think is the greatest compliment to me is he trusts me running the football operations. This league is so competitive, and there's so many good players out there, and there's so many good coaches, and that's why we have to win with the little things, and that's why we'll win in the front office, and we'll win with our coaching staff. My philosophy, obviously, is to try to find the best players that fit into the Denver Broncos. And I think that's, you know, the key thing is guys that fit into the system that we have and guys that understand what the Denver Broncos are all about.
What a journey it's been since 2011 when John Elway took over as president of football operations. He's had a couple of different job titles, but more or less he's been in charge of football. A time that you have to move on from Josh McDaniels. We had Tim Tebow. The uprising and acquisition of Peyton Manning, a Super Bowl embarrassment, to come back just a couple years later and win the Super Bowl and then sort of fall apart there over the past year and try to build things back up. And through it all, John Elway's had a heck of a run running the Broncos. There's a lengthy piece about John Elway written by Robert Klemko of Sports Illustrated that details the different stages of how old Elway was at certain points in this part of his journey. And for really the first time that I can remember, a very detailed accounting of his time with his son, Jack, and how significant that relationship has been. And Jack Elway is on the record in this article talking about his dad, and they talk about a very personal time when Jack Elway, who was a star out at Cherry Creek High School, went to Arizona State to play quarterback, redshirted his freshman year, and then as he was walking his second year, he's walking to the football office at Arizona State, and he calls his dad, and he tells him, "I don't want to play football anymore."
Well, he also talks about the incredible. The incredible Elway name, you know, and having to live with that every single day, everywhere he goes.
Not easy.
Everywhere, you know, on TV, on radio, every time you go to a sports bar, around town, there's a number 7 jersey sitting there. And for him to wear a 7 in high school, that's pretty big. That's pretty bold. And, and he also talks about, you know, it would have, maybe the load would have been a lot lighter if he would have had a brother or two that were also athletes instead of having sisters. But, you know, that's what happens when.
But let's be, it's in the article, Jack Elway says one of his favorite years of his life was when he was a senior at Cherry Creek.
Yeah.
And John volunteered to be the quarterback's coach. And in the article, Mark Schlereth is quoted saying that before that happened, he would sit in the stands with Elway, and Elway would just be grinding.
Man, he'd sit. I can see John sitting in the stands. I can see where he was. Yeah,
apparently,
I
mean, not just having a very good time.
You know, just.
I believe this was before Coach Logan, by the way.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But that was fun. And then, you know, eventually he went down onto the field to coach. Yeah, but I was there. I saw, you know, I went to Cherry Creek and saw those games. You know, I'm a big high school football fan.
Well, Jack had a lot of attention when he was a senior, rightfully so. And everybody's gunning for you. And he played well enough to be offered a spot at Arizona State, which
is
fantastic. He just didn't love it. He just didn't love it, and he felt terrible about it. Although he says in the article he made the right decision. To what he did, he felt it was the right decision for him, but still it was a tough call to make to his dad. And it goes to the competitive nature of John Elway himself. And of course, as a son, you don't want to let down your father. And I'm sure he didn't. You know, I'm sure John was surprised, as any dad, by the way, would be surprised if they found out their son who's on scholarship to be a NCAA Division I athlete. I mean, any dad in the world would be pretty shocked by that news. It's not like John was pushing it too hard. It's just like, it's surprising. You know, you try to do the best by your kids, Al, for what they say they want. And unless they tell you differently.
That's the path that you think that they're going to travel down.
The tricky part is if the kid's just telling you that because he thinks that's what you want to hear. And that's where it becomes like, what do you do? You know, do you help out? Do you back away totally? I mean, how involved do you get? It's a serious conundrum for all the dads out there. So it's a very humanizing piece about John Elway. And I want to read one quote from Jack, though. He says that he's seen a change over the last few years. Quote, this is John Elway's son. The change I see in him is how he communicates with us. It feels like a different guy. He's become extremely patient, and I think it's because he's had to deal with so much stress, he's more open. Are we seeing that very specifically with this year's draft, the type of guys that they got in this year's draft?
Yes.
And perhaps did we see it when John Elway passed on Josh Allen, who can sit on his knees and throw the ball through the roof, where in the past the physical skills of the quarterback seemed to be the everything, and we'll figure out how to make him a leader later.
Right, and it was mentioned in the article that Klemko wrote that one of the things that John Elway said that he forgot about picking quarterbacks is giving the team hope.
Mm.
Hope, you know what I'm saying? Like, because this guy's playing quarterback, you know, that gives us a chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have Trevor Siemian, and when you have
Paxton Lynch, Mark Sanchez,
you got to know. Okay, this article is, when did it come out, today?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, so the article comes out today, and when I was telling you why we couldn't keep Paxton Lynch, mm-hmm. even though the money was guaranteed,
there you go.
We have no hope to win
but
games
also,
if Paxton Lynch is playing quarterback. So they had to do it. They gave him every shot to prove that he could be a guy that you could believe in. But he never gave you that feeling that you can believe in him.
Are all three quarterbacks on the team now guys that you could essentially believe in for their
I
own
think
reasons?
Case Keenum is. Yeah, Case Keenum is.
Okay. There's a great story in here, too. Of course, John had a very close relationship with his dad, Jack Elway.
Oh,
he was a scout for years.
Oh, that man, Jack and Elway, that was my guy, man.
There's a story.
That was my guy.
There's a story. And was Ted Sundquist the GM in 2001?
I think he was, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they tell a story about how Jack Elway was part of the draft prep, and Elway was no longer playing for the Broncos, but he was just
visiting.
Seeing what it's all about. And Jack Elway was pounding the table for Drew Brees, but the Broncos drafted Willie Middlebrooks. Interesting story, especially when you know, right, that the Broncos have made a move now for Case Keenum, thinking that maybe those lessons, although Elway has gotten away from them, think about the guys he's put his name to. Brock Osweiler, big guy. Paxton Lynch, big guy.
Both 6'7", biggest guys in their draft.
I mean, we drafted Zach Dysart and Trevor Siemian. And, you know, Elway didn't have anything to do with the Tebow pick. But it's just been this thing where he just can't figure it out. Not yet. And so you go back to the past where his dad loved Drew Brees. Well, for the same reasons you love Drew Brees, couldn't you make an argument those are the same reasons you like Case Keenum?
I would say, you know, but Drew Brees, while he was at Purdue, was a different kind of quarterback. Drew Brees was always very accurate with the football, and he's delivered. He's delivered for San Diego. He has really delivered for San Diego, and he's really delivered for the New Orleans Saints. Can you say that about Case Keenum?
Not yet, but we'll see. He certainly delivered for Minnesota last year.
He delivered for Houston.
Okay, sure.
He delivered for the University of Houston.
Oh, okay, sure.
Got him on the map, but he hasn't delivered in the NFL. He had one good year now. One good year, and the question marks are still out there about who our quarterback is.
It's a fascinating article.
It's a good read.
There was part of it that I just, you know, I actually was kind of feeling heartsick for John a little bit. First of all, John's had definitely some tragedy with the, you know, some passings in his family that are very sad. And your son calls you and just says, "Dad, I can't do this anymore." I mean, just as a moment, that's got to be tough. You know, that's just a tough, tough thing, you know. And it's not John's fault that John is who he is. And it's a tough shadow for, I'm sure, his kids to grow up under, especially trying to be, you know, a quarterback.
Yeah, and then I think that my favorite part about the article was when John asked Jack about, "Hey, what about the camaraderie?"
Yeah.
Like, how do you get, you know, like, that's the one thing.
What about the fellas?
Right. That's the one thing that, you know, like me and John or me and Stink.
Aren't you going to miss that?
Oh, my goodness. Me and Pritch. I mean, we always have those moments where we played together and we've won big together, and we hold on to those moments. And just, you know, it's just when you're part of a team and you're part of a unit and you do the things that you're supposed to do and you end up in a championship moment, that relationship is one that will never, you know, it would never go away.
The article's deep. It talks about the timing of John's divorce and how that related to his son and being at Cherry Creek. And it's just things that you don't normally think about, but they're very real, every person type of situations that you have to get through. Everybody does.
Right. And the part that I think that is the best part about this, the best part about this article, talks about the draft. You know, let's talk about that on the other side.
That's The Drive on The Fan.
It's The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Couple of quick notes, and then we can dig into this John Elway article in terms of the draft. Two quick notes. Shohei Ohtani, it looks like he's going to have Tommy John surgery, and this is just really, really tough news. He had just started throwing again. He's been hitting for a little bit, but he just started throwing again. He pitched in a major league game. He did all right. But he had some irritation. They did an MRI, and no bueno. So it looks like, I mean, that is a year, at least a year. And guys do come back from Tommy John. There's no doubt about it. But I'm sure there's going to be a lot of pressure about, you know, hey, man, what are you going to be here? So we'll see what happens with Ohtani. For example, can he be a designated hitter while he's still recovering from Tommy John?
Wow.
I don't know. I mean, he's been incredible. You realize he has set records as a pitcher hitter that we have not seen since Babe Ruth. I mean, he has had an unbelievable year, even though it's been injury riddled. So I'm sad about that. And I can't say I'm all that surprised, because he came from a culture where there was no education or not much education. And it was really just baseball, baseball, baseball. It's the kind of the Japanese way. If you look into like Japanese Little League kids, Al, they'll practice literally for 8 hours a day, 4 days a week. It's just too much. I saw a Japanese Little League baseball schedule, and it was really ridiculous, to be quite honest with you. But that's the latest on Ohtani. An update on D'Angelo Henderson, as reported by Mike Kliss. If you make rookie minimum, you make $550,000 a year.
Okay.
D'Angelo Henderson on the Jets practice squad is making the equivalent of $510,000 a year.
Told you so.
So
told you to do a complaint.
So this is very similar to the Kyle Sloter deal. Very similar. So the Broncos did offer him a spot on practice squad, but I doubt they offered him $30,000 a week. So there's that.
So we had a chance to have D'Angelo on this team. One day we'll see
you
him.
You had to put him on the active roster, though. You couldn't put him on practice squad.
You know, one day,
or you had to pay him $30,000 a week.
You know, one day when you turn the TV on and see Hunter Sharp catching passes, you're going to say, hey, that guy was here, too.
Well, we will be playing at the New York Jets on October 7th. We'll see if D'Angelo Henderson's playing for him at that point. That being said, the Klemko article in Sports Illustrated, and D'Angelo was a draft pick. I thought a great draft pick, and you think of some of the draft picks that haven't worked out yet. But he's gone for good reasons. Now, the Broncos could put him on the 53. They could offer D'Angelo Henderson a deal tomorrow. But they do value, right now, Isaiah McKenzie and A.J. Johnson more than D'Angelo Henderson. That is the truth. They value Pac-Man Jones more than they... I mean, Pac-Man Jones is a game away from insuring himself $1 million. He's just a couple days away. How about that? That's pretty exciting for Pac-Man Jones, Adam Jones. So what did you want to say about Elway in the draft based on this article?
Remember I said to you that this was the best draft maybe in Denver Broncos history. And in the article, it talked about John maybe giving up a little more of the draft and who was selected and what kind of guys that were selected. We didn't guess on any of the guys that we have on this team this year. You know, these guys are from big schools, and they play well, and they were captains. So it's a total departure from the guys that we've taken in the past. Total departure. I mean, you look at our roster right now. I mean, we have two drafted guys last year in the third round that are on practice squad. So I don't doubt that Vance Joseph had a bigger input on this year's NFL draft. You got to know that, because this does not look like the other drafts that we've had. So, you know, if nothing else, I mean, we got good players and a lot of good players that could help us out for a lot of years. And it doesn't hurt that we got a starting running back, okay, in this year's draft, and we have a starting defensive end in this year's draft, and a number three that may be a number two at some point at wide receiver in this year's NFL draft. How does that happen? Only if you draft well. I mean, it's unusual to find this much talent in one draft. When you pick number five, you do have better chances to do it. But D-Mac, this is an excellent draft. And it does not feel like a John Elway draft from years in the past.
Okay, what's different?
The kind of players that we got. I mean, come on, man. Last year, man, out there. Listen, man.
Based on what? What do you mean by the kind of players? I mean, they talk about
team captains. Team captains,
right?
Playing at big universities.
All but one of the drafts was a team captain this year.
Right. Talked about Cortland Sutton being a 3-time captain at SMU.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley Chubb, a 2-time captain while he was in school. So it's to me, the rookie class is going to play big moments for this team this year.
But it's hardly like the entire team is made up of choir boys.
I didn't say that.
Right.
I didn't say that.
But this, year's, once again, draft, this year's draft is.
And once again, that doesn't sound like Elway either.
Well, it doesn't sound like Mike Shanahan either.
We got to know that Vance Joseph coached Adam Pac-Man Jones,
mm-hmm.
and Adam Pac-Man Jones is on this team. That's got to be a Vance Joseph move. That's not a John Elway move. That's a Vance Joseph move.
Okay.
Okay?
Now, yeah, but AJ Johnson. Hold on. I would guess, though.
Not a John Elway move.
I would guess, based on Mike Brown reacting to allowing Pac-Man Jones on his team after his arrest in 2017. I'm going to guess, though, a move like Pac-Man Jones has to be signed off by more than just Vance Joseph.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be signed off by John Elway.
Well, even...
And maybe Joe Ellis?
Well,
I don't
Mike
know.
Brown. Mike Brown is the owner of the...
The Bengals.
The Bengals, and he chimed in on it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that for a fact. It just would seem to me that that's, that comes with some baggage. I mean, pretty obvious, right?
Well, we just hope that, that he's not tempted. And, when I was looking at the TMZ report about Adam Jones in that fight at the airport, and he was targeted.
I know.
He was targeted.
I know the whole story.
I mean, that's who he is now, the guy that can be...
But you know what? He was targeted.
He was targeted,
but
dude.
But after the guy who attacked him went to court and the whole thing, Adam Jones is right there on social media, like, ripping on the guy. You know, it's like...
But why would he do that? I mean, why'd that happen?
Sometimes Adam Jones brings on things to himself. You realize that, right?
I do, but that last incident, if it didn't happen, would he have been signed sooner? Maybe. But, it's been part,
Well, I don't think that incident was the big deal. I think the arrest in 2017 and, the whole stuff being arrested and with the cop and the backseat of the car. That's out on TMZ, too, which is, disturbing. But, so draft-wise, there's a different philosophy. Probably helps that Gary Kubiak's around. Free agent wise, John's a competitive dude.
Oh yeah, but don't forget now, John. When we take on this opponent, when we take on this opponent this week, they change the way we look at football. When we got embarrassed in Super Bowl 48, we changed the way we looked at football. We went out and got Aqib Talib.
Yeah, but I think we...
Hold on.
Okay.
Hold on. We went out and got T.J. Ward.
Okay.
Okay. we went and got DeMarcus Ware. I mean, okay. we had a attitude shift here that was unlike anything that we have ever seen around here in Denver as far as the defense goes.
I think it's pretty fair to say Elway struggles with evaluating quarterbacks.
But he knows what everything else looks like.
Kind of the same way Michael Jordan has struggled. John Lynch is in the article saying he has a hard time evaluating safeties. And in the article, more or less, I think it was Stink that said, the biggest problem with all these quarterbacks is they're not John Elway. And, what he thinks of them, perhaps, that's why Peyton Manning was such a great match, right? I mean, it's the closest thing.
Yeah.
But developing quarterbacks?
Or knowing what they look like.
It's a tough thing. By the way, we should point out in this article, Elway tried to get Keenum like 3 years ago. There was a concerted effort. It just, it just didn't get done. So he's like Case Keenum for a long time.
He liked Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
He liked a lot of guys. It's just that, who do you get? I'm thinking about John Elway's
The Paxton Lynch one's going to sting, though.
John Elway drafts have not been spectacular, but his free agent moves, man, they have been money. They have been money.
So it's fair to say
that's part of the story, too.
Maybe the Broncos have turned a certain page. I think it's in terms of who they're looking for in the draft. I think it's also fair to say John Elway is the most competitive SOB you'll ever run into. And if it can make the team better, he'll do it. And the question is, I suppose, at what cost is winning, Al? And that's a fuzzy line. And
what do you mean? On him?
Well, I think just everybody in the NFL faces, you know, I shouldn't even isolate John here. I think everybody in the NFL, every pro sports team has to, you know, figure out, like, what will it take for us to win? And what are we willing or not willing to do? I'm sure it's a battle that, you know, all teams face at one point or another. With all that being said, Mark Schlereth, who's a big part of that article, too, has some thoughts you're rubbing off on Stink, Alfred.
It's your daily exclamation mark with Mark Schlereth, brought to you by Shomp BMW.
The Seahawks team is better than you think. Yeah, a lot of names have changed, but I'm telling you what, they're going to be great on defense because they play a system. They believe in a system. They tackle well. They run around. They fly around well. They got some young kids that can play. One thing about them, and I've always said this about this league in general, if you just tackle well, you're going to eliminate a lot of scoring opportunities. If you just don't miss tackles, because as an offensive player, it is so hard to string together, you know, an 8 to 10 play drive. It's really hard without shooting yourself in the foot, without having a procedure penalty, without having a holding call, without having a tip ball that gets bounced down, and now all of a sudden it's 3rd and 7 as opposed to 3rd and 2. Stuff like that happens, and it's hard to keep drives together. And if all you do is tackle well, you're going to win a lot of ball games. And you watch this team, they tackle as well, if not better, than any team historically in the last 6-7 seasons.
Mark Schlereth and Mike Evans tomorrow morning at 6 on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.